we get the hour going by welcoming back to the program an actor that you know from roles in films like Blade Runner, Coal Miner's Daughter, television series like True Blood, Deadwood, and of course his long run as Larry in Newhart. He's the author of a wonderful memoir, Yes, I'm That Guy, The Rough and Tumble Life of a Character Actor, and he's one of our favorite people to talk to. William Sanderson joins us. Bill, welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much. I was surprised to hear from you after we did that show with Bob Newhart or Zoom thing. Yeah, it was great to see them, but anyway, I'm happy to hear from you.
Well, it was wonderful. I had so much fun watching that reunion with you and Tony and John and our friend Julia Duffy and Bob as well. Y'all look great. And was it as fun for you guys as it was for us watching?
Well, it was fun. And always when a few people, whether it's from your church or wherever, tell you they enjoyed it, or relatives, and it was great to see them. We don't get together that often, and I missed Peter Scolari, and of course Tom and Mary Pran, but Tom Poston. But yeah, it was fun. But I think it's more fun after I got through it and didn't spill anything and didn't break anything. I'm still learning technical things. Got a lot to learn.
Well, you look great on there. I mean, everybody looked great. And Bob, man, he's 91 years old now, and he's still not only sharp, but he's still got that great Bob Newhart comic timing.
Oh, it was wonderful to see that. I mean, his memory is better than mine and most of us. And yeah, it was a pleasure to do it. And even the hosts who raise a lot of money for charity, for the Actors Fund and others. It was great. It was great. I don't know what I'll say to you that I haven't already said, but just one thing, if I can.
Please do.
Breaking news. You know how they say that on TV. I'm retiring officially.
Well,
except William Sanderson, can I speak in the third person, is retiring. But I still love to talk about my book, or any chance to talk about myself, I guess, but podcasts and so forth. But I'm not doing any work.
Well, as long as you don't consider this work and you'll keep coming back to talk to us once in a while.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. You know, may I mention the book? You gave one of the first reviews, and I still love the book, and I still return to it now and then. But it was very nice of you. And you read a lot of books, so to even take time to get through Yes, I'm That Guy, The Rough and Tumble Life of a Character Actor, that impressed me. And the guests, I looked up the guests you had on. You talked to physicists. You talked to scientists and sports people. I mean, when do you sleep, Rich?
Oh, I managed to get that in. Usually in my day job, I'm a school teacher during the day, so I nap a lot then when the students are working.
Oh, my goodness. What are you teaching?
I teach civics, government, and U.S. history.
Oh, like ninth grade?
Yep, ninth grade, high school freshman, and occasionally some juniors and seniors.
Oh, man, this is exciting. You know, one of the courses I passed, civics. But congratulations, you know. And I saw the picture of your handsome son. I see the dog. I said, well, he's got a great life.
I'm doing okay. And, you know, like you, it took me a while to get here. You know, I came to fatherhood at a pretty late age. And one of the things I love about your story is that you acknowledge some of the struggles that you had along the way, some of them of your own making. But when you found Sharon, things got a lot better. And sometimes it just takes finding that right person.
Oh, I was so lucky. You know, I have a cynical friend who passed away. His name's Charles Napier, a character actor, and he said, women were like dice. Sometimes they come up snake eyes. But I guess that applies to men, too. But I did have a I stayed in my adolescence, it seemed like, most of my life, but things turned around when I met her, and she helped with the book. I had to stop drinking completely, she could remember things that I couldn't, but I'm fumbling here. I don't want to talk about the book too much.
You talk about the book all you want, because I went back, Bill, and reread it here over the course of the last week or so when I knew we were going to be talking, and I think I enjoyed it even more this time around, revisiting some of those stories, and I wonder if you wouldn't mind relating from the book and from your life, of course, your friendship with Tommy Lee Jones, because you've worked together with Tommy a lot, and I think, as you put it in the book, you have a love-hate relationship. You love Tommy, he hates you, but it goes deeper than that.
Well, one of my mutual friends that wrote the screenplay, who the late Bill Whitliff said, I said, I don't know if Tommy likes me. He said, he does. He does. But he doesn't like, Tommy doesn't look you in the eye when he talks. But it was great starting. I'd seen Tommy on the stage in New York, a play I wanted to be in. Didn't get it, but Coal Miner's Daughter, which I'd played a moonshiner, and it made money, and that led to me getting some other jobs with him, and he is a little tough, but it was a big compliment for him to ask me to be in a play, ostensibly about Billy the Kid, the guy who claimed he was Billy the Kid, and he was, as you might know, fairly crazy, but it was really, you know, the money wasn't an object. We shot it in Texas, and it was a learning experience. You know, can I give you one example? I can't cut it off. The piece of direction, I said, Tommy, he in the photos I see, he's got a smile, and he said, maybe he's not really smiling. Maybe his lips are just turned up. If you do that, listeners going home, try it, man. You feel like a crazy person. So, you know, but it breaks my heart that I didn't get to do a seventh job with him, the Batman, because I want Jim Carrey and Val Kilmer. But I'm dropping names like crazy. A director wouldn't let me out, famous guy, out of a rehearsal, so. But Batman, you know, they pay residuals when they do well at the box office or not. So, anyway, I did a number, and I've got a lot of Tommy stories that are, I wish I could come up with a better one.
Can you?
He picked me up outside the hotel, and it was behind a lattice door. I said, what are you doing lurking outside the hotel? He said, I don't lurk. I loom.
I love that story. I also love the story that you tell in Yes, I'm That Guy about how you got your role in The Client. That was a fascinating story.
Oh, piece of luck. In New York, I'd go to poker games, and I didn't have enough money. I didn't want to lose it, but there was some guys that later went to Hollywood and very successful. One of them, I guess, was Joel Schumacher, the famous director of The Client, his agent. And my agent couldn't get me in on the movie. And so I called Joel Schumacher's agent, and he said, well, he's coming over here in a few minutes. You put a resume together and email it or send it over, fax it. And so I put a suit on and went to CAA offices, and I had a flat top. And he ended up hiring me. The casting director knew me, lived in my building. And my ex-wife threw me out in the hall once when I was naked, and the casting director said, oh, you got a problem, Bill. And I ended up getting the movie, and I said, I don't have to audition. And the casting director said, Joel said, your naked appearance in the hall was good enough. I didn't tell the story right, but
but that,
you, I didn't tell the story right, probably.
But, oh, you told it great, and that part does seem like such a natural for you, but then you found out no lines, no dialogue for your character.
Oh, yeah, and then I learned how hard it was for Tony, my brother Daryl, John, my Volstead, Tony Pampas, how hard it is. But they had written me a scene, and I come in with a tie, see if he wants to wear that in this French restaurant, but Tommy didn't want me to talk. It's not the first time. And so I didn't know until I flew to Memphis that he didn't talk. He, in the book, he's kind of a colorful guy. But that's often the case with the character actor down the pecking order. He's in Excuse Me Song, he was a cellmate of Gary Gilmore, my character.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, like you said earlier, I feel happy and grateful considering where it came from. And, you know, the music was a happy part of my childhood. The home life, not always. But I probably said to you before, Santana wrote a book, and I read it because my wife really loves Santana. And he said, don't cry at your own movie.
Well, that's good advice. Bill, and you talk so eloquently in the book about your battles with self-doubt through the years, but I don't think that's uncommon to you. Have you found along the way that most actors, because you're in a business where you're always getting rejected, that self-doubt is something everybody deals with?
Yeah, and I steal a phrase from somebody, low self-esteem is a step up. But the insecurity never goes away, but I've read famous directors that say I was never very confident about my work, and some so-called artists or movie actors have a dissatisfaction with themselves, but that may be why we do it.
Mm.
Get a review like you wrote. Get a pat on the back. I don't know. I just found acting fun as opposed to law school.
Well, you've said that you're retired. You made that announcement, and if indeed you're done with that part of your career, are you awful happy that you got to go out doing some great work in that wonderful reunion of Deadwood, the movie?
Well, yes, I'm happy, and the agent who, you know, he represents people like if he talks to me, he only talks to me if there's some money really involved. But he said, do you know how many people get two hit series in a row?
Mm.
And notwithstanding, I didn't do every episode, but that even worked out better because you can get a chance to do other things. Now, I'm very grateful, but I'm not above practicing some self-deception. I'm sure I put that in the book. Jackie Gleason said, self-deception thrives in a compost of flattery.
That is perfect.
I walk in an office in L.A., and there's four or six people, and somebody said, I don't know who to suck up to. Still don't. But that's why I talk to you. I can have two or three people on the radio, and I go crazy. I don't know who I'm talking to. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always a treat for us. So, Bill, you're out there in the Harrisburg area, and that's where Sharon grew up, and you've become a part of that community. What is it you like about being where you are these days?
Well, I start with the people. They're just really real. That's a word Tony Pappenfuss used to use a lot, to try to stay real. And they're the kind that... we were talking the other day. They don't need to lie. They're just straightforward. Mm. And you might have a bad back, which my wife does right now, sciatica, if I'm pronouncing it right. But I walk into CVS and I said, well, my back is bothering me. Pulling weeds or something. I had several years ago. And he said, oh, yeah, everybody has a bad back. On to the next, all along, as Tennessee Williams says. Did I pronounce that? I don't speak French, but I looked it up, and I loved the word. It's march forward.
It sounded great to me, but I only took a couple years of French, and that was decades ago in high school.
Well, Somebody laughed at me when we were at dinner in New York. Oh, a Southern accent. French with a Southern accent. Well, I don't know. But you have a lot of free time in L.A., too. So I would take courses in different things. But what else? What else?
I want to get, because we always love it when you would tell us a little bit about your many encounters with Elvis growing up in Memphis. Can you share an Elvis story with us, Bill?
Oh, that was the most fun part to get through. It's like yesterday in my mind, but I have gone to auditions, and my wife said, oh, stop talking about it, and they'll know how old you are. But, of course, I was a child, really, 11 years old or something, in the fifth grade, when his songs hit the radio, and I really liked the first one he recorded. That's All Right, Mama. But somehow he did a concert in Memphis at I was about 12, and it was just a really exciting outdoor arena. And then all of a sudden, at 13, I would hang around the store on Beale Street where Elvis shopped. And the owner, I put this together later, the owner's son was in my mother's class, for third grade classroom. He says to me, do you want to ride out to Elvis's? I got to deliver some clothes. I'm 13 then, I think. And, yeah, okay. We ride out, and you go through the gate, ride up in the back, and see the Cadillac motorcycle. But there, when I went in with him, he said, Mr. Lansky said, sit down over there. So I did. Three or four guys hanging around that worked for him or traveled with him. The piano, and Elvis was playing it. And I don't know if I said it in the book. It's like being in heaven. He's playing a song by Fats Domino. I didn't know Elvis could play the piano. I said, oh. And then he did Don't Be Cruel. And I put some vulgarisms in the book that I heard the guys say about the song would never get old. And he didn't know who I was, but he wasn't unkind. I think he did say something like, I wondered who that was in my house, and I didn't know who it was. Then saw him in the record store, other stores, up close, kissing women he'd never seen. It was fun. The concerts were fun. But once I started, it was the young Elvis. He didn't even have the dyed black hair. We got to play football together until it got so big. And they were bringing out the university quarterback to play. Then they had on Elvis's team, they had a guy that later played in the pros. I can't fight that hard.
But
we had fun. We had fun. Amusement park, movie house. He didn't know me from Adam, but.
But he must have always had some of that little kid in him, because we were talking with Billy Mumy, who was a child actor back in the 1960s, and he told the great story of running into Elvis. No, actually, it wasn't Billy. It was Barry Livingston from My Three Sons, who saw this limo and on the lot while he was shooting a show, and there was Elvis. And he saw him, and Elvis said, you like the car? Do you want to take a look at it, kid? And sure, and he had a TV in the back of his limo, and he got Barry in the car and actually drove him around the lot and just seemed to understand what it was like, even when he was in his 20s. He remembered what it was like to be a kid and seemed to have a special fondness for young people.
Well, he was 9 years older than I was, but, that's one of the things I can't forget. We were playing football, and there was a tub of ice and Pepsis, and I went over, and I think I got one, and I was looking in the window of a limo that they had brought out that evening to play football. And he said, you want to sit in it? And I said, I don't want to get it dirty. And he said, well, if Bardo won't hurt, get it dirty, you won't hurt it. And I had to look that up. Bardo was someone he knew, but I thought he was making fun of some greasy guy. But he was, and of course, I got up the nerve for him to get an autograph. And outside a neighborhood theater, And a woman said, told me how much it was worth, and I hope she's right. It's not for sale.
Well, Bill,
always courteous, always nice to the fans.
It is always a treat for us to talk with you, Bill. And again, it was so great to see you with your television brothers last week on that Newhart reunion. I told Julia Duffy that she looked wonderful. She insisted it was all the lighting. I don't know.
Ah, she always looks beautiful. But can I get you to ask me why I wrote it, if you don't mind?
I would. Yeah, absolutely. Why did you? Because it couldn't have been easy to tell some of these stories from your life. Why did you write the book?
Vanity. You know, there's lots of reasons that I wrote it, but now if somebody does ask me, was it vanity? You know, some people think that's everything, but I hope not.
Well, Bill,
thank you for letting me impose on you, though.
No, as you mentioned, I read a lot of these books. We have a lot of authors on, but this is, to me, it's one of the best. As somebody who's done a little acting myself on the side at a very amateur level here, but it's such a glimpse into an actor's life, and it's such an encouraging and uplifting story of your life and what you've learned, the lessons along the way, and I love the book. It's called Yes, I'm That Guy, The Rough and Tumble Life of a Character Actor, William Sanderson. It is, once again, so much fun for us to catch up with you. Thank you for carving out a little time for us today.
It's an honor, and I don't know how you do it. Get some sleep.
I will do that. Thank you so much, Bill. Be well.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. That's William Sanderson here on Downtown. Again, the book available on Amazon and everywhere good books are sold. Yes, I'm That Guy, The Rough and Tumble Life of a Character Actor.